Burkhart, Connolly, Court, Crank, Dayton, Edwards, Eklund, Ayer, Flitner, Freeman, Furphy, Giroux, Gray, Greer, Haley, Hallinan, Halverson, Henderson, Hunt, Jennings, Kenner, Kirkbride, Larson Lloyd, Larson Dan, Lindholm, Lone, Laux, McGuire, Madden, McKim, Miller, Nicholas, Northrup, Obermuller, Olson, Paxton, Pelkey, Piperinen, Pannell, Salazar, Schwartz, Summers, Steinmetz, Sweeney, Walters, Wilson, Winters, Zawanitzer, Mr. Speaker, Allen, Greer, Larson Dan, excused, Laux, excused. We have, oh, wait a minute. Why do I have one excused? Larson Dan? Laux. We have 59 present, one excused.
Members, Reverend Rick Veit is with us again this morning from St. Mark's Episcopal Church.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to offer another collect, which is a prayer, a fancy word of collecting your thoughts before God. That's the concept. So a collect for this House of Representatives. Let us pray. O God, the fountain of wisdom, whose will is good and gracious, and whose law is truth. We beseech you so to guide and bless these representatives, that they may enact such laws as shall please you, to the glory of your name and for the welfare of this people in the state of Wyoming. For it is in your name that we pray. Amen.
Okay, members, we're at that order of business of Journal Committee Report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 22, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Guru and Representative Gray.
Messages from the Senate.
Messages from the Wyoming Senate, February 22, 2017. Message number 327. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 26, Bark Beetle Program Funding, ayes 22, noes 8. Message number 328. Concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 56, Mobile Home Title Status Upon Permanent Foundation. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 329. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 111, County Collective Accounts, ayes 30. Message number 330, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 152, Search and Rescue Operations, the House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Message number 331. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 164, Professional Licensing Boards, Telemedicine, Telehealth, ayes 30. Message number 332, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 231, Firearm Possession, Allow Felons Antique Firearms. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 333, conferees appointed. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the link committee number one from the House on amendments to House Bill 22. The Senate conferees are Senator Pappas, Chairman, Senator Agar, Senator Case. Message number 334, conferees appointed. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the Light Committee, number one from the House Committee to House Bill 37. The Senate conferees are Senator Coe, Chairman, Senator Kinski, and Senator Peterson. Message number 335, concurrence passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 45, Liquor Dispensing Rooms, ayes 27, conflict 3. Message number 336, concurrence passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 56, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, ayes 30. Message number 338, conferees appointed. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the Light Committee, number two from the House, on amendments to Senate File 6. The Senate conferees are Senator Van Platen, Chairman, Senator Coe, and Senator Scott. The Senate requests the House appoint a conference committee, number one, to meet with the Light Committee from the Senate to report recommendeds to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Message number 339, concurrence, passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File number 126, Guides and Outfitters Penalties, ayes 23, noes 6, excused 1. Message number 340, concurrence, passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File number 15, Special District Budget Requirements, ayes 26, noes 4. Message number 341, concurrence failed. Mr. Speaker, Senate File number 53, Veterans Hiring Preference, the Senate failed to concur on House amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated, noes 29, absent 1, Signed, Alan Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Our doctor of the day is Megan Schaff van der Zanden, and our nurse of the day is Jennifer Burns from the Wyoming State Board of Nursing. Welcome to the house. Thank you for being here today, and hopefully we will not need your services. We'll all stay healthy and hydrated. Keep washing our hands. Okay, reports from standing committees.
Senate File 88, introduced by Senator Scott, Palliative Care, an act relating to public health and safety. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 88, engrossed Palliative Care, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Garou, Hallinan, McGuire, Sweeney. Noes, Representatives Clem, Dayton, Halverson, and Lone. Signed, Representative Barlow, Chairman. Senate File 28, introduced by Management Council, Revisors Bill, an act relating to the revision of errors in legislation. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Rules and Procedures, to whom was your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred Senate File 28, engrossed Revisors Bill, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Larson, Madden, Miller, Nicholas, Pelkey, Summers, Walters, Wilson, excused Representative Northrup. Signed, Representative Harshman, Chairman. Senate File 29, introduced by Management Council, Legislative Employees, an act relating to the legislature. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred Senate File 29, Legislative Employees, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Larson, Madden, Miller, Nicholas, Pelkey, Summers, Walters, Wilson, excused Representative Northrup. Signed, Representative Harshman, Chairman.
We got that order of business of reading and signing of enrolled acts. The first enrolled act for our consideration is Enrolled Act Number 53, Original House Bill 164. The reading clerk will read the Enrolled Act.
Enrolled Act Number 53, House of Representatives, being Original House Bill 164, an act relating to professions and occupations, allowing licensure boards to promulgate rules related to telemedicine, telehealth, as specified, and providing for an effective date, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 53, Original House Bill Number 164. Congratulations, Representative Barlow. So sign. The next Enrolled Act is Enrolled Act Number 52, Original House Bill 111.
Enrolled Act Number 52, House of Representatives, being Original House Bill 111. An act relating to workers' compensation, providing that county governments or county governmental entities may establish a collective system for managing workers' compensation claims and benefits, requiring rulemaking and providing for an effective date, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act 52, Original House Bill 111. Congratulations, Representative Barlow. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act is Enrolled Act Number 51, Original House Bill 26.
Enrolled Act Number 51, House of Representatives, being an Original House Bill 26, an act relating to state lands authorizing expenditures for bark beetle mitigation projects, specifying requirements for the expenditure of funds, providing a repeal date, and providing for an effective date, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Enrolled Act Number 51, Original House Bill 26. I'm so signed. Our next order of business is the consideration of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 26. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 26, sponsored by Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, Game and Fish Licenses, Confidentiality, an Act Relating to Game and Fish.
Senate File 26, having been read two separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 32.
Senate File 32, introduced by Judiciary, Peace Officer Recordings, an Act Relating to Public Records.
Senate File 32, having been read two separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 42.
Senate File 42, sponsored by Judiciary, Opiate Overdose Emergency Treatment, an Act Relating to Public Health and Safety.
We have an amendment. Representative Larson. I think it's Representative Larson Lloyd.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move second reading amendment number one to Senate File number 42. And if we could, folks, let's go to page 7 of that bill down to on line 10. We talked about a person who is acting in good faith, administering an opiate antagonist to another person, that they may do so under this section. But then the last sentence, starting on page, the last part of line 12 says, as soon as possible, the administering person, and yesterday we had a discussion of whether it should contact emergency or shall contact, and what this amendment does is just remove that last sentence. That kind of takes us off into a whole different realm of what puts liability on the person as assuming that they know what this law is, and when we say shall contact emergency medical services, they may or may not know that. We just wanted to know that they're immune from civil or criminal liability and to get that antagonist administered. And so that's the intent of this, is just to remove that last sentence and make that a little clearer on what the intent of that section is, and remove possible and we'd ask for your favorable vote, said Mike Greer.
Any further discussion? For your first time, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, and I appreciate the intentions here, but really I think this is an important part of the legislation. Especially if this should pass. As a matter of policy, then, when someone goes to get this medication, if they go to the pharmacy, I think it's important for the pharmacist then who can talk to this person, giving them the medication, whether it's the nasal mist or the injection or whatever it is, and that the pharmacist can then have a conversation with that person saying, listen, if this is ever used, then it's important for the person who's getting this dose of whatever that they get medical attention immediately following that. And so I think just a matter of policy, it's good to leave it in there. I understand it's about the immunity here in this section, but I would hesitate to completely remove that. So on and against. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone for their first time? Representative Pelkey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of the amendment, stripping this language from the bill does not eliminate the fact that a pharmacist who's obligated to provide information and training is not going to instruct the person about the proper use, which includes calling emergency services. But the elimination of this sentence would eliminate the civil liability for someone who otherwise is making a serious attempt at saving a life. And if they fail to contact emergency services in a timely manner, frankly, I don't believe they should be sued.
Anyone else? First time, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of the amendment. And, in fact, we had this conversation in the committee, and so not to belabor the point, but to give the body just some context here. On page 2, starting on line 5, lines 5 through 8 actually outline a requirement that the board, the proper boards in this realm are going to adopt rules specifying requirements that a pharmacist has to meet when it prescribes the opiate antagonist. And what we heard from those particular boards is that they will adopt a policy that says that a pharmacist has to put this, hey, you need to call 911 after you administer it notice on the prescription. And they're going to make sure that those pharmacists properly convey that message to the person picking up the prescription. So I think all that's covered, and that's actually, interestingly, why they plugged it in the bill is to require that. We had this conversation about taking it out because you can accomplish it in the rules and regs, and they will do that. So I don't think there's any concern about individuals being noticed about calling 911, but leaving it in has consequences of potentially creating statutory liability in wrongful death. While the bill provides immunity for personal injury, it does not provide immunity for wrongful death. So you leave it in, you can create a statutory duty for wrongful death. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, speaking on and for the amendment, anything we can do to get this product in the hands of the right person without sideboards on it is what we should do. Let it be available. Vote for the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With the failure of the House Standing Committee amendment, which changed the shall to should, there was quite a bit of debate on this topic in committee. And we felt that holding the individual liable as far as making it a shall was too far. That should would be somewhat of a compromise. But since that went down, I think now what we're left with is just the elimination of that sentence, and that will make the bill better. And the points of the previous two speakers, I think, outline my position. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Question, second time? Question being called. We are voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 42. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Second reading amendment number 1 has been adopted. Senate File 42, having been read 2 separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 72.
Senate File 72, sponsored by Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources. Large Project Funding, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act.
Senate File 72, having been read 2 separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 113.
Senate File 113, sponsored by Senator Nethercott. Felony fleeing or eluding police, an act relating to regulation of traffic on highways.
Senate File 113 has amendments. Representative Biteman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 113. I'll explain the amendment real quick. It basically, we're going to delete the Pelkey Amendment. Then we're going to add back in the felony provision, but we're going to add some teeth to make you earn the felony here a little more. So what we're going to do is page 2, line 19, delete the period and insert an and, where we're talking about the reckless driving statute, and give three more things here you got to do to get this felony here. A, operate the vehicle on the left side of a roadway in violation of Wyoming Statute 31.5, 205A or C. B, operates the vehicle in the wrong direction on a roadway designated for one-way traffic. And C, operates the vehicle in excess of 30 miles an hour over the maximum lawful speed, which is in accordance with what you, our Idaho, or our state to the west has done. Sorry. Pretty straightforward. Just ask for your favorable consideration, and I'll answer any questions. Thank
you. Any further discussion? Anyone for their first time? Seeing none. No. Rep. Chairman Greer.
Mr. Speaker, I just I do want to rise in support of this amendment. I think if this is good legislation, and the felony in these circumstances are correct, and I think the sideboards, in the way that this has been defined by the bringer of the amendment, he's done a great job. So I'd encourage your support. Thank you.
Any other members first time? Chair, Representative Pownell.
First for second, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else? Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On and against the amendment, I'm still concerned that on the $10,000 damage, so somebody in, a police officer pulls up, a guy decides to elude, and maybe he's stopped and he backs up and he hits the cop car hard and he causes more than $10,000 damage and it's a felony. And maybe it would have been a felony anyway. I'm still not clear that we need to require a felony in this instance.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just on and for this amendment, again, I think that the sideboards that we're putting into this give us a little bit more true grit. This really puts it in a little bit more characteristic form to make sure that we're not just stacking charges, that these issues have been applied. You can clearly state that this is being done. And then the prosecuting attorney is going to still have the job to prove this. So I think this is a really, really good way of looking at this, and I think this is a fantastic amendment. So on and for.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question for the bringer of the amendment. So I'm looking at lines 12 through 14, section B there. So my question is, would it make it a felonious event to operate the vehicle in the wrong direction on a roadway designated for one-way traffic? Here's the issue. I think this is, I've seen this happen one time. I was in downtown, the capital city of the state that is shaped like a hand with an upper peninsula above it. Anyway, that individual was driving a very large bus, kind of got turned around, big place. He started driving the wrong way on a one-way thing. I can guarantee you, from the look on his face and everything else, that was something purely accidental. But would that be turning that instance now into a felonious event? And that's my question.
Anyone else for the first time? First time, I think we're moving to second. Is there anyone? Representative Halverson, or did you want a first time? Chairman Barlow, got all these folks moving to the mic. You're giving me the fake out. I just want to make sure I get everybody who wants to speak to this issue. Okay. Representative Chairman Nicholas.
Mr. Speaker, so I've got a couple questions about this. When you're talking about on the opposite side of the road, so to me, there's a little bit of an issue about that because some folks actually pull over into the opposite direction in order to make a left-hand turn to get out of traffic. And so all of a sudden that becomes a felony. Or if you're avoiding running into somebody. So I have a question about that particular language. And to go over 30 miles an hour there are 45-mile-an-hour speed limits where a lot of us very frequently drive more than 30 miles an hour. And so suddenly that may be a felony if you're eluding. Or sometimes if you're passing vehicles. I mean, to me, if you start adding all these up to what becomes a felony and how a person would ever know if they're committing a felony, that just doesn't make sense to me. So, anyway, that's my first for a second, I guess.
Okay, anyone else for a first? Oh, Representative Pelkey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment,
you know, I understand what the good representative is attempting to do, but I think this is something that may need a little bit more work. I'm loath to use the term not ready for prime time, but I've heard it used here before. And, you know, fundamentally, I'm in support of the concept of this bill, but I think right now what we're doing is trying to put patches on a leaking air tube, and I think probably what we ought to do is maybe step back and try to work this bill a little bit more carefully. Maybe not as a committee interim topic, but maybe somebody, I'd certainly be willing to work with somebody on a bill in the interim that would address these issues.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, on and against the amendment and against the bill, I do agree. I think this somewhat helps the bill. But again, if you vote for this, what you're doing is you're voting to delete the Pelkey Amendment, which changed it from a felony to a misdemeanor. And boy, that just bothers me. You look at the list already in the bill, and any one of those criteria you can carry, depending on what you do as far as harming another person, that could be a felonious offense. If you or a felony offense, if you do more than $5,000, I think that's what the standard is, more than $5,000 in property damage, that's a felony offense. And so here we are, and we're going to make eluding a police officer, running away from a police officer, if you do these things, and that's going to be a felony on top of all the other felonies that you've tried to do. And I just don't understand. So I would urge the body, if you want a felony out of this thing, then vote for this amendment. I don't feel it should be a felony. I just don't. And I think there's other ways that you could handle this. So on and against. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for the first time? Okay, we're moving to second time. Anyone before the sponsor, Representative Greer?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, I think the bringer of the amendment, he's not putting a patch on anything. He just put a new inner tube in his tire, so it'll work good for us. Here, let's be clear what this amendment does. And it is true, this takes us back to a felony. But we're talking about somebody who is fleeing under the fleeing statute, which again has specific language regarding it has to be a clearly identified police car or highway patrol car, okay? Then you're coming in, and what he is looking at is he added some conditions on the reckless driving. So what it says now is that you've got the reckless driving, which is a willful, wanton disregard, and one of these other three components. He's added additional requirements on that so that we get away from the discussion on just the reckless driving in and of itself. So yet not only do you have to meet the elements of the reckless driving, you then have to meet one of the other elements, which is driving on the left side of the roadway, which was a question that was raised by two prior speakers. Well, reckless driving and driving on the wrong side of the roadway. Reckless driving and driving the wrong direction. Reckless driving and driving 30 miles an hour over the posted speed limit. That is what this amendment does, and I'd encourage your support.
Second time. For the sponsor. Chairman Nicholas.
So once again, I'm against this amendment, and here's the problem with it. Mr. Chair, Mr. Speaker Chair, Mr. Number One Speaker Chair, first in our hearts, first in our minds. So as the if you combine these additions in, now you can if you can cause bodily injury, which is a felony. So in and of itself, if you cause bodily injury in a hot pursuit case, you have committed a felony. So now you're committed two felonies, and so it's redundant. If you cause property damage in excess of $5,000, that's a felony. It's a criminal act. And so now we've combined, so that's now we've doubled up the felonies. Now we're saying if you drive over the speed limit a certain amount, or if you go down the wrong way of a street, it's a felony. Well, I don't know how many of you folks go to Denver on occasion and turn down the one-way street and get cited for it, but it's happened to me before because you're not used to all the one-way streets. And so all of a sudden now that essentially, and if a cop pulls up behind you and you go an extra two blocks, that's a felony. If you're going down 19th Street here and you're in the wrong lane and you're eluding for three blocks, that could be a felony. And so if it's a one-way or if it's a so what we've done is we've enhanced the felony for less amounts of criminal conduct than it was in the original bill, which we all killed. And so on and against, I just think it needs reworking, and we still have a huge problem with the reckless component. So on and against.
Representative Powell.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. You know what? This bill does, or this amendment does add some real good structure to the bill. For the one thing, if you're driving down the wrong, you know, I mean, it's happened to me before. I've got on a one-way street going the wrong direction, and, you know, I'm sure if somebody would have seen me, there'd look of terror in my eyes, but I wasn't being pursued by a law enforcement officer. I mean, I went down there mistakenly. That's not a felony. I got out of the way and got on the right street. So all these things that are being brought up, don't forget that when this starts with the chase. It starts with the eluding. And then the individual decides that he wants to create some real danger by trying to run into people, and he may miss. As I said yesterday, if somebody takes a shot at you and misses, we still charge them with a felony. And in this case, if they take a shot at us with a car and miss, it's not necessarily going to be charged a felony. So I urge your support. It's a friendly amendment, and I would urge you to vote yes on this amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else? Second time. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I'm just trying to think of a scenario. So let's say I'm driving. Let's say I'm going back home, and I see some lights. It's dark out, and I see some lights, and I'm just not sure. And I don't like pulling over just on the side of the road. I usually try to find a turnoff or something and get off somewhere else. But in any event, so let's say I keep on driving. I don't pull over right away because I don't want to pull over right inside of the road. I want to turn off, and I keep going. And let's say now it's a chase, okay? They're eluding, and maybe that's the way it's interpreted by this officer. So now I'm eluding a police officer, and let's say there's another parked car or something that's on the side of the road, and I go into the left lane legally to pass this other car while I'm being followed by a police officer. Now, could that be considered a felony? I've just crossed into the other lane. I'm eluding a police officer, apparently, because I want to pull over to a safe spot. Could I be potentially charged now with a felony? And that's really what we're looking at. I mean, that's one example. I on and against the amendment, I just don't see creating more and more felonies. We just want to felonize this, felonize that. Let's just felonize everything. It's kind of what we're going for here. And so on and against. Thank you.
Representative Pelkey for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, on and against the amendment, on and against the bill. This bill doesn't really satisfy any major need under Wyoming statutes. Virtually every one of the hypotheticals that's been portrayed by the supporters of the bill is already illegal. They can be prosecuted as felonies. We're just adding another felony to the books. Frankly, I think this is unnecessary legislation, and under the majority of the hypotheticals presented, both the committee testimony and here on the floor, those folks would be prosecuted for felonies, and all we're doing is adding another one to the books unnecessarily.
Anyone else? Second time for the sponsor. Okay, Representative Biteman, bring us home.
All right, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the good speaker would say, we have been sawing sawdust here, so I will not belabor the point. I would applaud our good representative's imagination and all the hypotheticals. They're pretty entertaining. But back to the actual amendment here, we are just adding our favorite word, sideboards, here to the reckless driving portion of this felony, and this is only pertains while you're running from the police. This doesn't change reckless driving in any other situation. This doesn't apply if you're going the wrong way down a one-way street on accident without five cop cars chasing you. So let's get back to what this is really about. Get out of the weeds. Vote yes on this amendment. Thank you very much.
Well, members, that was tremendous debate, and I thank you for that. We are voting on we are voting on second reading amendment. We are voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 113. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
Chairs in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. That amendment fails 26-31. We are now on second reading amendment number 2. Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I will respectfully withdraw this, understanding that fleeing, we have a medical term called parasympathetic response, and that is either fight or you flight, and I choose to flight.
Second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 113 has been withdrawn. Senate file 113 having been read 2 separate times. Question is, shall the bill pass? Should the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 136.
Senate File 136, sponsored by Appropriations, Energy Science, Stipends, and Fellowships, an act relating to abandoned mine land funds.
We have an amendment. Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As we were going through this bill yesterday, and I looked at the amount of money we were giving out, at $2,837,000. Excuse me, I'm just a little breathless at the time, but I kind of wondered where the money was going to. And I know it went to the University of Wyoming for their science initiative. So my amendment was just to make sure that some of that money actually went to Wyoming students. And so I entered my amendment, which you can see here, and I move this amendment, number 1, to Senate File 113. And all it does, it says that 136, excuse me, that it guarantees, or at least it should, each year, 50% of those funds should be awarded to Wyoming students rather than just, say, foreign students. And that was not a firm number given, but I was just trying to get some thoughts on where we should go with this particular bill.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would encourage you to vote no on this amendment. The purpose of these stipends are to really get high quality graduate level candidates to come to the University of Wyoming and do high level research and high level projects. If you were to take and put this amendment into place and make it work, it would really slow the process down significantly, because as these are highly competitive stipends, and so as they are offered and then accepted, there would always be a changing of the bar depending on who's accepted, who hasn't accepted, based on the offerings. And so it would just really slow the process down. And the Wyoming students already have that advantage. If those Wyoming students want this, they're probably going to get it. So having this amendment in there really doesn't benefit anything, and it does just slow the process down. Really, we're just trying to get these high-level graduate students here, and this amendment slows that process and takes away that opportunity. So I would encourage you to vote no.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, first, I just wanted to clarify something I'd said yesterday. This isn't 2016 budget. It was the 2011 session laws. So that's how far back this goes. And on and against the amendment, mainly because it says demonstrated Wyoming residency as determined by the University of Wyoming. We already have trouble defining residency, and we've just not let another agency come up with a definition of residency. So how many of these do we get? We've had this over veterans and others. Just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So on and against the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, Mr. Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. On in support of this amendment, I think it's a good idea to earmark some of this money for Wyoming students. And even though we may be seeking out a very, very talented group of people, why not denote some of that for our Wyoming students? So on in support of the amendment.
Representative Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, this is a really good amendment. And I just don't like when, you know, a lot of experts in Wyoming, especially in government, you know, they always are looking out of state for this expertise. And right here in Wyoming, we have a lot of expertise. If you look north out of the seat of government here, you'd be surprised at the quality of the people we have here in Wyoming. And it goes for our students also. And for them to be able to have a little extra look, having been a Wyoming resident, to be able to get these special treatment for their graduate programs, I think is a good deal for our Wyoming students that go out there. And frankly, it's good for the university. If it happens to be a Wyoming kid that goes to graduate school and gets all this knowledge and goes out there and wows the world and comes back and look at the endowments and things like that that these Wyoming students, the homegrown kids, are going to bring back to the state. I think this is an important amendment. As far as determining residency, they really already do that, and I think that's already a loophole in this, because I think these out-of-state students or even foreign students probably qualify after a few years. So this isn't a gigantic step, but it is the right step. Thank you.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During this session, we've been talking about other states poaching our students. And so I think this is a great way for us to keep our high-quality people here in the state of Wyoming. Please support this amendment.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, on and against this amendment, although I really do appreciate the bringer of the amendment's desire to make sure that some funding goes to Wyoming students. I think that's a good sentiment. But when I think about how this would be operationalized, it concerns me a bit. UW, in terms of residency now, does have requirements, but because we have higher tuition for non-residents, those are pretty strict requirements. But someone can live here for a year and then get that residency. And so you could be in some way kind of encouraging someone to come to Wyoming and spending a year before being at UW in order to get that residency and that eligibility, and we don't want those unintended consequences. But more importantly, the analogy that I'm thinking of is with our residency programs for doctors. There's one here in this community, there's one in the center part of the state. And what we do with those programs is that we encourage the best and the brightest doctors to come to Wyoming, do their residency in family practice, and then we have found out that they stay. And that's exactly what we want with these best and the brightest of students coming to the state. And so I think that the consequence of having this open both nationally and internationally is we are bringing in some incredible energy-related graduate students who will stay. So I'm not against this amendment, but I think the sentiment behind it is good, and UW is probably listening, and they should be paying attention to the desire that Wyoming kids be getting a second look. But I wouldn't want it to be a requirement.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Please vote aye on this amendment and support Wyoming students.
Representative Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, on and against the amendment. First of all, this program was started in 2011. There are people in the pipeline that actually have already been promised this money as they bring them in, and they use these funds as an enticement to get these particular students into these colleges. And so basically what we're doing is says, oh, by the way, we've cultivated these folks who are at University of Wyoming, and now we can no longer fund you. And so remember, the only reason these funds exist is because they didn't spend quite as much as they intended, as was allocated out of these FMR dollars, because of the way they were kind of operating the program. So all we're doing is extending an existing program to actually, you know, final up and use the dollars for folks that are already on staff, on faculty at the University of Wyoming, and or where they've had a commitment, they have interviews, and they go through the process. And so by doing this, literally they're going to have to start all over through their interview process and for the representations they've made over time. So we're coming in at the bottom of the ninth inning and saying, oh, by the way, we're going to change the rules of the game. And that's just not fair. If you want to entice more students from UW, then let's go find $5 million and let's give special scholarships just for Wyoming folks to do this. But let's not pull the rug out from under UW in the bottom of the ninth saying, oh, by the way, we're going to change the rules because it sounds nice and it feels good. I mean, that's not fair to them. And so on and against.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So yesterday we heard testimony that first of all, we're not setting up this program for next year because we didn't know if we had the money, and now we're hearing there's already individuals promised for this. Specifically in regards to this amendment, one of the biggest aspects that tips me in favor of this amendment, we heard from someone that spoke against it. They talked about the difference between resident and non-resident tuition. Well, hey, folks, we already do this. We already give this privilege to our resident students. This is just 50%. That's all we're asking for, 50%. Of these stipends go to in-state residents. So on in favor of the amendment, I think this is a good aspect. And as we heard yesterday, they forestalled this next year because they didn't know how to the money. So this will be a nice surprise to them.
Representative Chairman Zwanitzer.
Well, thanks, Mr. Speaker. Just a question, if anybody can tell me what an energy science graduate stipend is. So I know we have a School of Energy Resources, but they don't offer master's degrees. And I look online at the people who are kind of working. We have a Center for Economics and Energy, and we have an MBA program. I don't think that's a proper noun, that does energy. I guess my concern is if we pass this, are we without – and if someone can tell me in energy sciences, maybe that would be different. But we're going to say, hey, if half of the stipends and fellowships have to be Wyoming kids – then you're going to say, let's expand what falls under the energy science category to all sorts of different majors. But if energy science is defined somewhere and it's specific majors, please let me know.
Representative Lone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, let's help Wyoming students.
Anyone else for their first time? Okay, we're going to move to second time before the sponsor. Second time, Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe we should help some Wyoming companies in getting the best and the brightest from around the world and in Wyoming and offering to be one of the most competitive places in the world to get and attract some of the people. A lot of the people we have now in these programs are from overseas. Assuming their green cards stay in effect, we can put them to work here in Wyoming, and maybe we should be looking at this not only for Wyoming kids but for Wyoming industries and the future of our state to get some of the best research, because that attracts grants, that attracts further study, that attracts more research dollars in the university. And so I would be against the amendment.
Anyone else for their second time? Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple things to discuss. There was a question about what is energy science. I've got a list that I can't pronounce, a whole bunch of these projects that these folks are working on, but it's everything that's related to the field of energy, such as dry reforming of methane over lanthoside-based pyrovacites and H2 production. So it's an energy-related. It's how do we use our energy better? How do we create different energy or different products out of the energy we have? So it's anything that relates to energy, whether it be coal, oil, gas, solar, wind, all of these energy-type projects is what these are used for. A reminder that the money we're talking about is AML funds. If we don't use them on this project, we lose them. So we can bring folks in who also spend their personal dollars to Wyoming. We're essentially, in my mind, leveraging these dollars, because these folks spend more than just what we give them here in the state of Wyoming. If we don't have this program, they just don't show up. That's kind of how that works. The other thing that really bothers me about this amendment and why I would encourage you to vote no is, what if we have zero folks from Wyoming even apply? We have now held hostage half of this money because it's for Wyoming folks, and not even a single Wyoming person has applied by chance. And so we have limited the ability to bring in the best and the brightest from around the world, all to hope that we get some Wyoming folks to apply, and now they haven't applied potentially, and we've held that dollar value hostage. So I would encourage you to vote no, because we can bring in the best and the brightest using these dollars from around the world. The university is already working hard to make sure Wyoming folks have the advantages. They will look at all of these applications. If you're a person from Wyoming, even if your idea isn't the greatest, there is a high likelihood you will be chosen because you're from Wyoming, because that is a priority of the University of Wyoming. And so I think that this is just entirely unnecessary. Like I said, we hold a whole bunch of money hostage potentially because we don't even know if there's enough in-state folks to apply for all of these dollars. We have spent a lot of time this session working on how do we get more people to come to the state of Wyoming. We've had bills that discuss getting them to come to our universities and community colleges by offering in-state tuition, by offering various scholarships, and now we take this amendment and go the opposite direction and say we're going to limit it to only half the folks that are available can come from out of state, because we only want our folks from in the state to do this. So ultimately, this is a great program. It's been working extremely well. And the bill here that we're talking about is just an extension of the sunset. This isn't a new idea. This is an idea that was started in 2011, as was discussed earlier. We're just extending the sunset to allow these projects to move forward and do good work for the state of Wyoming and put Wyoming on the map in more than one place in terms of our energy production and our energy resources.
Representative Gray.
It's about time we do something for Wyoming residents.
Trust the chair. Members, during debate, and any time, we always want to address the chair.
Oh, thank you, Mr.
Committee. Or we would never want to make debate between us. It's always through the chair, so it's never personal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's about time we do something for Wyoming residents. We've pass bills increasing fees, just bills that have done a lot. And meanwhile, people outside the state we've been giving benefits to. It's about time we do something for Wyoming residents. Let's vote yes on this amendment.
Any other members for their second time? For the sponsor, Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For all those that spoke in opposition of this amendment, is the reason they should be voting for it. Vote aye for Wyoming.
We are voting on second reading amendment number one, the Senate file 136. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
Second reading amendment number one has been adopted. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed? Less than 34. Senate file 136, having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate file 155.
Senate file 155, sponsored by Senator Burns. Bar and Grill Liquor License Increase, an act relating to alcoholic beverages.
We have an amendment. Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move amendment number one to substitute bill Senate file 155. And I'll cut to the chase. On the substitute bill, this tremendously helped in clarifying what originally got sent over. On your handouts that the association that represents liquor establishments, it looks like this. So if you go to the tables, what the tables are about is to the far right-hand two columns, it shows what the substitute bill does and proposes, and the far right-hand column is the proposed amendment. So what the amendment does, just very simply, is the 13 communities that some of them are not out of bar grill licenses, but it sets that across the board at two. And in the column next to the far right, this authorized is what is currently authorized under the substitute bill, just so you know what the changes are. I ask you for support on the amendment. What came over from the other body is too much. If you think back to your communities across the state, large, small, and frankly, this is a big town bill. And if you think back to who supports you in your communities for any of your fundraisers, whether it's your Little League baseball team or rodeo, whatever, your high schools, in particular, it's your hometown liquor dealers. And those that this 155 affects the most isn't the big box stores. It's your constituents that have been there day in, day out supporting you. What this whole bill is about is quote-unquote economic development. And I personally am not buying that at all. The pie in all of our communities is only so big. Both customers, guests, and employees. And dumping this many more licenses into the communities, I just don't think is a good idea. On the chart again, I would urge you to take a look at that and think if that's the right approach, even with a substitute bill, if that's what you want in your communities. And I got the same letters from the association that represents towns and cities. I got the same notes that from a new formed organization in my fair city. I urge you not to buy into those arguments. This is not economic development. And think about the guys in your community. Don't think about the big box stores or, frankly, the chain restaurants that just aren't our hometown businesses. So I urge you with that to support Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 155 Substitute Bill. And with that, I would call for the question.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, thank you, Mr.
Thank you. That is 4 minutes and 54 seconds. Oh. Well done. Anyone else for their first time? Representative Biteman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, I think it goes in the wrong direction. I'm all for free market competition. I think it helps the consumer. The more competition we can get out there. And in fact, personally, I don't think there should be a limit. I don't think we should be centrally planning in this aspect. I think, you know, let the market dictate how many bar and grills there are in a particular city or town. So on against the amendment, still debating on the bill. I'll probably vote for the bill. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else? Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First for a second.
Anyone else? First time. Representative Gray.
First for a second. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First for a second.
Anyone else? Thank you. Anyone else for the first time? Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On against the amendment, ladies and gentlemen. So when you go to the good state below us, like if you go on skiing or things like that, there you can go into the with your kids into the restaurant and you can have a beer and a cocktail and it turns into a family affair. And to me, if we have more bar and grill licenses out there, we're actually going to have more family affairs. We're going to have more folks gathering, and less just the folks that go into bar and liquor stores to consume liquor. I mean, it's more family friendly. It's just a better atmosphere. And why should we be protectionist against those few folks that have the privilege of having a limited license to leverage that advantage? To me, it's just good, open, competitive markets. And, you know, I'd like to be able to go to more restaurants in this town or in Casper or other places that have that opportunity where you can have an alcoholic beverage with your family around you and a glass of wine with dinner. And I think it's just a good thing. So on and against.
Representative Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to have the members of the body take a look at a handout that I gave. It's really the same information that you have by the sponsor of the amendments handout. But it's kind of convenient to look at because you got across the top here, I've written in 237. That's the number of available or authorized licenses we have currently. If you look at the way it came over to us, it was the number 302, and that was a plus 65 compared to the 237. Okay, then you go to the next one. This is a substitute bill, and it's 277, so it's been tapered up down a little bit, and it's a plus 40. Okay, now this amendment, if I've got it right, is what you see in the rightmost area there. There's 251 total, and that's plus 14. Now, this, you know, 14 more licenses in the state of Wyoming bar and grill licenses is immaterial. It's insignificant. We had a testimony in committee that's, from learned people in there that whenever we've added the number of bar and grill licenses before, and in fact go clear back to when we just started it, it never has had a deleterious effect on the price of full retail liquor licenses. And that's really what this is all behind. I don't think we need, there's no evidence, in my opinion, that we need protectionism in this manner. There's evidence that shows that there's much different perception of what a full retail license is, and I would urge you not to vote for this, and I suppose I'm about out of time.
2 minutes.
Oh, I'm not out of time.
And 15 well, seconds.
I may not, Mr. Speaker, I may not have to get up again now. This substitute, ladies and gentlemen, is a compromise between the two. You know, and that's really what the compromise is based on, what the department was suggesting was reasonable for their, from their standpoint. And the bill really recognizes the changing habits of American households. They eat out more, and they like to have a beverage, I guess, before their meal. The testimony from public officials was unanimous in this regard. What this amendment does is just take 7 towns in Wyoming and just arbitrarily gives them 2 more licenses, regardless of what their population is. So please oppose this amendment number 1.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Madden. That was 3 minutes, 19 seconds. So, not that we're counting, but you inquired. Well done. So, anyone else for their first time? Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for this amendment, I've really got kind of a different outlook than a lot of people. You can look through any one of these drop-offs that you've had, and none of them equal anything for my neck of the woods. We're not getting any one of these establishments, no matter what. Here's why I'm on and for this, and this is something we looked at during the interim. What happens when you dump a bunch of new licenses? Or what are these licenses currently being used for is what we should ask ourselves. They're being used as collateral at banking institutions. So all of a sudden, if we dump a lot of these new licenses out onto the stream of things, that devalues those licenses. Now, granted, I don't like that these licenses are being used as collateral. I don't think that's right that a government-issued license should be used as collateral. That's not right. But it is being done. So if we turn out a bunch of new licenses, we devalue the existing licenses, and existing Wyoming businesses are the ones that suffer. It's not these new ones coming in. It's the existing ones that are already paying taxes, that are already employing Wyoming industry and Wyoming employees. So take a second look at this before we jump in with both feet and say, we need a bunch of new licenses. Realize that we could be damaging these existing licenses quite a bit. Now, I think it's a correct step to take 2 in these larger cities. Why did we pick these larger cities? It was brought up by the good chairman of revenue. Why were these cities picked as having an increase of 2? Those are the cities without these bar and grill licenses. These are the cities that are completely out and need to have that bump. Do they need a bump of 16? Do they need a bump of 6? Let's try 2. We can come back next year. If that's not enough, if all of a sudden they want to build 6 in the city in the center of the state, then we can come back next year and look at that. But let's not devalue existing licenses and hurt our existing businesses because we feel that this is the right move. We're talking about real Wyoming jobs, real Wyoming economy that's already in place. Vote aye on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, this is a good debate. Everything that you've heard is true. But it goes back to, you know, we created this problem by even having liquor licenses to start with. I don't even know why we did that, but we did it. These guys that have these particular licenses, yeah, they do have value to them. So we need to ease out of this over a period of years. I'd like to simply see a bill that they disappear in 10 or 15 or 20 years and we're back to the free market. But I think this amendment's a step in the right direction. I really don't like it. I don't like the bill. I don't like the liquor licenses. But, again, we created this mess, so let's try to fix it.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Remember, we're talking about bar and grill licenses here. I think some of the debate has gone towards restaurant licenses and full retail liquor licenses. It's about bar and grill licenses. Two of the municipalities I represent, a portion of each one, where the river is green, it won't really affect them because they have not used all of theirs. But the city where the springs are rocky, they would like some more bar and grill licenses. Vote against this amendment for the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment. And I'd like to address the thought that more licenses devalues current licenses. More licenses equals economic development, more business, more opportunity for business, and that can only increase the value of everybody's licenses. Against the amendment and for the bill.
Anyone else for your first time? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In regards to the Majority Floor Leader, just a confession to the body, it was my great-grandmother who was in charge of the Wyoming Women's Christian Temperance Union, who is probably responsible for the situation we find ourselves in now. That being said, I just wanted to address a couple things, and I think the last speaker had it right. We're talking about bar and grill liquor licenses right now. So these can't be held as collateral. They can't be transferred if your establishment you know, it goes out of business, it goes back to your local licensing authority. These are the liquor licenses that you have to have 60% food, 40% or less alcohol being sold. And I think if you look in your local community, certainly in mine, the last two or three independent restaurants we had are these type of bar and grill type entities. So you heard some testimony, you know, that your local liquor dealers benefit your community more, they give more. I mean, I was a small business person, but, you know, when I gave gift certificates, the big box stores, they gave gift certificates. Some of these larger chain restaurants that are bars and grills, they are heavily involved in our communities. I think the only thing, so you have full liquor licenses, which are your bars and your packaged liquor. And so there's some concern by those people who hold the full retail liquor licenses that if we let more bars and grills in, that will somehow dilute their market share or cost them business. The testimony we heard in committee was that's not actually true, and we haven't seen that happen yet. And so I thought we made a pretty good compromise in the committee. You'll see if you look back on the original version of 155 and the other body, what they were advocating for you for. And I told you yesterday that I thought 16 new bar and grill liquor licenses in my community was too many, and that's why we settled on 6. Going down to 2, I don't think solves the problem. You know, we heard in the good city over the hill, they had 19 applicants for their last full retail liquor license. If you allow more bar and grill liquor licenses, you do get some chains, but you also get a lot of small-town businesses that your local entrepreneurs, if you talk to the people in the center of the state, you talk to the people over the hill, a lot of these new businesses are Wyoming people who want a bar and grill, and they want to penetrate into the market, and you're actually helping Wyoming people as well. So I'd like you to remember that. Thank you.
Any other members for your first time? Okay, seeing none, we're moving to second time. Second time before the sponsor. Any members would like to speak a second time? Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If my good friend from the city of the Friendly Ghost will allow me a license, I'd like to use the metaphor of a windmill. I was going to use Goldilocks, but that's kind of overused. But the windmill, you know, when it's the first bill that we had before the substitute, the windmill was really cranking, you know. And then the substitute slowed down a little bit. And with the amendment, it slowed down just a bit more, but each time it's changed, it's really taken sort of an adjustment, if you will. And I think that's all we're talking about. What's going to drive the success or failure of these licenses is the communities. And I guess I'm thinking about how is this going to affect the community that I live in, the people that elected me. And I feel that for all the good reasons already been mentioned, that yeah, we should have some more. And then also there's some things that have been mentioned that we should hold back on some of it. So I think this amendment strikes a good balance. It's worth considering. But certainly as you think about that windmill slowing down, you know, in the different versions, it's kind of like too fast, it's a little bit too fast, maybe about right. You be the judge. I'm going to go ahead and vote for the amendment and for the bill, for the substitute.
Any other members for their second time? Second time. Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I feel like I need to clarify where I was going with my devaluation spiel in regards to these licenses. So what happens is these bar and grill licenses, as often happens, is a new bar and grill license comes out on the scene. Well, a full retail liquor license holder will then at that time, if they can, buy the bar and grill license, and then they have a $250,000, $300,000 license that they get to sell. That's not free market economics. I don't care who you are or where you're from. That's not free market selling a governmental license for $300,000. And that's essentially where we get our devaluation of these licenses. So when you're looking at this, realize that this is still an increase. This still allows those cities that are burgeoning, that are already at max capacity, allows them to add to a piece or in a situation where it's tight. And we also heard testimony that I think that my city would enjoy having six more of these. Where was the scientific data? Was there six applications for the last one? No. There's no data behind that. So it sounds nice to say, let's put a number on this. Six sounds good. Realistically, folks, we need to look at a slower approach. We've got time over the years to keep working on this and keep moving forward to more of a free market aspect where we don't have these industries that are buying and selling these licenses for a net gain. That's the goal, is to get down to a point. Don't rush headlong into this and break the existing businesses. Vote aye.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to have you resist this amendment because the arguments for the amendment are faulty. There was no evidence that there's been any damaging effect on the value of a full retail license because of these bar and grill licenses. There's absolutely no evidence. We had people there in the committee who owned full retail licenses, and they admit that. This is not a situation where it's going to have any deleterious effect. There's no need in this instance for protectionism. And that's really what we're talking about here. That's the only argument for it, is that this is a protectionist amendment. So please vote no on it.
Anyone else for their second time? For the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks for the debate. Obviously, I'm on the other side of the spectrum, but let me try to just clarify a couple of things. One of the first folks, the body that talked about family, that's why we have restaurant liquor licenses. Bar grill are really about the Applebee, well, I'm not supposed to say that, but that was what the bar grill license sector was all about, was that model, how they do business. And how did that come about? To begin with, it was with the support and working with the state liquor, so the association, you get it. So, but that whole model is a bar in the center of their restaurant in most cases. That's what their business model is. And so the restaurant liquor license, which is unlimited in all of our communities and has the availability, serves that very, very purpose. Another comment was made that there's really no proof or evidence on the devaluation and protectionism. I would do a gentle pushback on that. Having owned full retail licenses where I could have potentially substituted a bar grill, I will contend in our community that I hail from that when the license, the bar grill licenses first came in, it did have an impact for, I'm going to estimate, about 4 years on valuation of our full retail liquor licenses. But then it evened out. Then we changed the formula a little bit a few years ago to allow a few more bar grill licenses. And that's basically what I'm suggesting here with the with this amendment, is let's ease into this rather than six licenses. My community with the substitute bill would get six licenses. I believe it's way too many all at one time. Some of the other issues were, of the 13 towns that both the substitute and the amendment affect, it's really eight of those communities of the 13, because of that difference. As an example, the Razor City still has, I believe it's one available, and that might be not correct. So, but there's several of these towns, such as Rollins, still has available, Lander, Riverton, of that list of 13. So we're talking about the bigger towns, and I will agree that some local establishments, local ownership, have applied and gotten some of these. It's not all 100% big chains, but I applaud this community for being able to get something out of those big national chains, because we have difficulty in my community getting them to participate in, like, the state tournaments. So with that, again, I would ask for your support. And even if you were against 155 to begin with this amendment, it is livable. And makes it livable. We are not restricting free market. If in a lot of your towns there are licenses, full retail licenses available to purchase on the open market. So I would push back a bit. But with that, I think I would truly urge your support of the amendment. And it's the windmill analogy is very good. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. We are voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 155. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 has failed. Senate file, division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed. Amendment fails 29-30. Senate file 155, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. We're at that order of business of third reading regular list. We have one bill for our consideration. Senate file 105, the reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate file 105. Sponsored by Senator Scott, Uniform Power of Attorney Act, an act relating to powers of attorney, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate file 105, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Bightman.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bovey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Clausen.
Aye.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Court.
Aye.
Crank.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
Aye.
Flitner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Grew.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Haley.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Kenner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
McGuire.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Obermuller.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Piperinen.
Aye.
Ponell.
Aye.
Salazar.
Aye.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
Aye.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 60 aye.
House bill having House Senate file 105, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the House, Senate file 105 has passed the House. Chairman Nicholas.
Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking more today than I have in a long time. So there was an error made, and so I have a motion to make. And what happened is, as you recall, we voted on House Bill 192, which has to do with the automation fee for the courts. And we added, the original bill had $10, and then we had an amendment that I asked for your concurrence on that added $5. It came from our good friends from down the hall. The problem was that when the bill came, was originally drafted, it was drafted in the Senate, and then they moved the bill over to the House because it had an increase in fees on it. So it had to come, it had to originate out of the House. So when they drafted the bill on the Senate side, they forgot one thing. They forgot to put in the enacting clause. And the Wyoming Constitution says that it shall be enacted, and then you have to go through and outline what the bill is. Well, unfortunately, that was not caught by our folks behind us, and it definitely wasn't caught by the drafters over on the down the hall. And so the bill that we passed through our concurrence yesterday is basically unconstitutional because there's no enacting clause in it. And so the mechanism that we have to follow to correct that is we have to make a motion to rescind the vote that we made yesterday, and that's the motion that I'll make. And that's an ayes and noes, and then I will go back to the concurrence and ask that we not concur. So we go to a committee, and in the committee we go back in and put in the enacting clause, and we come back and do it again. So I apologize for that, and it's just the steps that I was hoping we could do it through a revisor's bill or something like that, but it says, no, you need to, we have to undo it and then come back again from a conference committee to bring the bill back to the floor to add the enacting clause. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I would move pursuant to Section 480 and through 483 and the past practices of the House that we rescind the action taken by the House in concurring with the Senate amendments to House Bill 192.
Okay, Chairman Nicholas, so just to repeat the motion pursuant to Mason's Section 480 through 483. The motion is to rescind the past action, which was the concurrence on House Bill 192. That motion appears to be in order, and so here's how we're going to proceed. We'll first vote on the question of whether to rescind the previous action of the House, and that is the concurrence. And so if this motion then passes, then we'll take a second vote on the original motion to concur, and we'll get to that point, and I'm sure the chairman will ask for your no vote, so it can go back to the original, go back to the Senate. So the question is then, should the House rescind its previous action, concurring with Senate amendments to House Bill 192? So this motion then will require a majority vote of the members elected. Is everyone clear? So an aye vote would be a vote to rescind our action. An aye vote would be to rescind our action of yesterday to concur, and then it would, and I've checked with the chief clerk, the bill is still in our possession, allows us to do that, and if we vote to rescind our action, then we will be back to a concurrence motion, and then we'll talk about that when we get there. And
correct, so that, Mr. Speaker, and so then on my motion, I ask for the aye votes to rescind.
Okay, is everyone clear? Okay. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Allen. Aye. Baker. Aye. Barlow. Aye. Biteman. Aye. Blackburn. Aye. Blake. Aye. Bovey. Aye. Brown. Aye. Burkhart. Aye. Bird. Aye. Clausen. Aye. Clem. No. Connolly. Aye. Court. Aye. Crank. Aye. Dayton. Aye. Edwards. No. Eklund. Aye. Ayer. Aye. Flitner. Aye. Freeman. Aye. Furphy. Aye. Giroux. Aye. Gray. No. Greer. Aye. Haley. Aye. Hallinan. Aye. Halverson. No. Henderson. Aye. Hunt. Aye. Jennings. No. Kinner. Aye. Kirkbride. Aye. Larson Lloyd. Aye. Larson Dan. Aye. Lindholm. Aye. Lone. No. Laux.
Aye.
McGuire.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim. No. Miller.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Obermueller.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Piperinen.
Aye.
Pawnell.
Aye.
Salazar.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
Aye.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Zawanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 52 aye, 8 no.
The motion to rescind has received the vote of the majority of the members elected to the House. So now I would turn Mr. Chairman Nicholas for your second motion on concurrence.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move that the House concur in the Senate amendment to House Bill number 192, and I ask for your no vote on that concurrence for the reasons previously discussed.
Okay, so we are now voting on concurrence. Senate amendments to House Bill 192. We're setting up the computer for the vote. We'll pause. Okay, the motion is to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 192. Chairman Nicholas has asked for your no vote. Take a majority of the members elected. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Aye. Allen. There you go. Sorry. House Bill 192. Allen.
No.
No. Baker.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Biteman.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
No.
Bovey.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Clausen. Clem.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Court.
No.
Crank.
No.
Dayton.
No.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
No.
Ayer.
No.
Flitner.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Furphy.
No.
Giroux.
No.
Gray.
No.
Greer.
No.
Haley.
No.
Hallinan.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Henderson.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
No.
Lone.
No.
Laux.
No.
McGuire.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
No.
Obermueller.
No.
Olson.
No.
Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
No.
Piperinen.
No.
Pawnell.
No.
Salazar.
No.
Schwartz.
No.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
No.
Sweeney.
No.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zawanitzer.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Clausen. No. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 2 aye, 58 no.
By your vote, you have voted to not concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 192. I appoint Conference Committee Nicholas Chairman, Representative Connolly, and Representative Edwards. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, your yellow sheet with the general file on it, there's a couple of small changes. The second bill up today will be Senate File 97, So insert that as the second bill after 169. And on down the list between Senate File 78 and Senate File 57, insert Senate File 156. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed say no. Representative Henderson.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Thanks. Mr. Chairman. Majority Floor here.
Just to rehash the first five bills on general file, Senate File 169, Senate File 97, Senate File 123, Senate File 35, and Senate File 81.
Thank you. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 169. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 169, sponsored by Senator Dockstader, Migratory Bird Refuge, an act relating to game and fish.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 169 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and the good representative from House District 21 will explain the bill and the amendment.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you Senate File 169 and also the amendment, the Standing House Amendment to it, and ask for your aye vote on both of them. I move both of them. And the amendment is simply adding language to the bill on page 2, page 1 and page 2. And all it does is on page 1, it states on line 14, the state consents to no further acquisition. And on line 15, after lease, it adds in there, other than acquisition of state. Then on page 2, it simply deletes our land covered by water on page 1, on line 1. This bill is a bill that was brought to us by our constituents, very concerned with the migratory bird refuge you have in the town. I think since it's mentioned in the bill as the Cokeville Meadows National Wildlife Refuge, we can use that term. Anyway, they have a wildlife refuge on the bottom part of their land across the valley that right now covers 7,000 acres. They had talked with the federal agency to wanting to expand that to 27,000 acres. Well, the town's kind of against this, and they, when asked why, they says, well, they would give you a list of maybe 32 different articles, but they would limit it down to 10 or 13. And if you look in your box, you have a handout like this, showing the refuge, showing how much is now in the refuge and how much they want to put into the refuge. Number one reason being that that's almost 23 miles more of refuge they want to add. So let me give you the list of their concerns. First, federal budget challenges. The refuge is unable to handle the existing responsibilities. They don't upkeep it. The people are allowed to use the refuge for farming, but they don't really take care of it that well. Not the people, but the federal government. Number two, the negative impact to the ranching and the ag-based community in that area. They disallow certain things to be done with that land, and so that affects the farming and the ag community. Loss of funding to local government schools, fires, hospitals, weed and pest districts. If they expand this from 7 to 27,000, they lose that money also. Unresponsive to local governments as they just discuss planning of the possibilities. In other words, they don't include them in their planning. The federal agency has influenced grazing permits. Part of the grazing permits has been canceled on them, and so they're very concerned about that. Wildlife has thrived, thrived before the refuge. Now the wildlife has changed so much, now it damages the crops and that particular area also. And then it can't do anything about that. When created, it was supposed to be a hunting for waterfowl and game. That has since been rescinded. Very slow to improve on that. The wildlife also resulted in the expansion of brucellosis in the surveillance area, and additional testing procedures is now ongoing. The concentration of wildlife has resulted in damage of fence and also in eating of the hay storage, which they don't reimburse for. And they can't create an original natural area without upstream reservoirs and the railroad. Mineral rights issues on 2,900 of the proposed 27,000 acres. And so this is one of the reasons they want to shut this down. They want to limit it. They don't want the expansion. They want the ability to work with what they have now. And so that's what the bill is about. Any questions?
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your box, there is a handout of the property we're talking about. It's entitled Cokeville Meadows. You can see the current 7,000-acre refuge and the 27,000 acres that were originally agreed to in 1989. And all this bill does is limit the refuge to the current 7,000 acres and release Wyoming from committing to the other 20,000 acres. And at this point, I would call the question on the amendment.
Question. The question being called, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
Question on the bill.
The Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Question being called.
Mr. Chairman.
Pardon me. Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I have a couple of questions. The bottom of page one, there's an insertion of state. And then if you follow that to the next page, it's state land that has been inserted there. So this is actually being, state land, I think that's probably referring to state trust lands would be my guess, something that our Board of Land Commissioners would have control over. So I need that clarified. And then, two, I want you to look at the repealer. The repealer is, bringers of the bill explain the repealer, because what I guess I'm interested in is these 7,000 acres. What we're led to believe is this is holding it to the current 7,000, and maybe that's what the amendment does, etc. But I guess I would say that if we want to lock it in at something, we should actually just put the legal descriptions of it, say this is what it is, and be done with it, not try to limit in this way. So I guess I don't have any problem with trying to hold it back, but if we're trying to do that, we have other circumstances where we identify. We define the range township sections, this is what's in it, and there'll be no expansion for this purpose. That's what I would suggest would be a different way to approach this. So first, the state land component, why state land, why state, and two, why the elimination, I would argue, of a private property right, and that is in B, and that's the ability for you or I or property right to sell their land. Thank you.
There's no description in there.
Chairman McKim.
My last name is Allen.
Pardon me.
I don't have very good sight up here.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to answer the previous speaker's question about why state land, what we were intending to do, Mr. Chairman, in committee is if a private individual wanted to sell land to that agency, they could. And so the only control we have over land is state land. And to answer another question that he had is, yeah, that could be a second reading amendment. And there's somebody else here.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I voted against this bill in committee because I didn't have a lot of information. So after committee, I went out and I found out that most of this land that we're talking about right now is privately owned. And what the community wants, which was stated by the bringer of the bill, is just to limit the federally controlled land in this bird refuge to what it is now. I was also concerned about limiting the property right to of people to where they couldn't sell. The way that it was explained to me is this will say that they can't sell to the federal government, but they can sell their land as they want, no matter with what we did with this bill. This wildlife area was created in the 1980s, early 1990s. And in those days, what happened was is if you wanted to create, in this case, a bird refuge, you basically had to buy the property and do the sole and make that a sole use for it. We've progressed a lot since then with conservation easements and those kind of deals to where that you're working with the local, in this case, farmers and ranchers, to where that if they want to expand this refuge, they can. They can maintain property values. They can maintain agriculture. And I have shifted since I voted against this in committee that says this is a bill that takes care of people's constituents, and I hope that you would support the bill when it comes up for a vote.
Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm with the good chairman of
health on the repealer. I have some real questions on repealing B, 23.1.106B, because what we're also repealing in that is a requirement that eminent domain shall not be utilized, which would open this up for the use of eminent domain, if I understand this correct. So I need some explanation on this. Now, I like the bill. I mean, cut it back to 7,000. I mean, I'd like to see an amendment cut it to 7. I don't want to give the federal government any more of our land. And if someone could tell me what Wyoming got for this in the first place, I'm just curious. That's more curiosity question. But I have some real concerns about repealing B. So thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to the last question, what did Wyoming get? We got to look at some pretty birds, but that's about it. there was a question about the repealer, and what we're repealing here is the original Migratory Bird Refuge in Bear River Area Act. We're repealing it, and I would note in here that there is no specific location in the original act, so we didn't feel a need to insert it into the new one. But I urge your aye vote on this. Let's give Wyoming another 20,000 acres. Thank you.
Question.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to tell you a little bit more about this. You've seen a problem that they had a few years back out in Nevada and a couple of years ago that they had out in Oregon. What's happening in the western side of this state is no different than what happened in those two areas. The federal government is trying to push these people into forsaking their land so that they can, what they say is making it a bird sanctuary. I believe it goes a lot deeper than that. I don't know all the facts about it, but I don't believe that we should let the federal government have any more of that land than we can keep them from getting. We need to protect the people of our state. We need to stand up for them, and I believe that this bill is a good one to pass. I do think it needs to be amended back to where they can't get any more than they possibly can keep. On and for the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 169 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, say no. Senate File 169 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 97. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 97. Introduced by Senator Coe, Tobacco Settlement Data Sharing, an act relating to the Wyoming Tobacco Settlement Fund. Mr. Chairman, your convening number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 97, Tobacco Settlement Data Sharing, respectfully reports, same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Connolly, Dayton, Furphy, Hallinan, Kenner, Larson, Madden, Overmuller, and Paxton. Signed, Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 97 do pass. And I will explain it, Mr. Chairman. This is going to be a quick bill. This is a $17 million bill. And it allows us to continue to participate in the master settlement agreement that was first negotiated back in 1998. As a result of this master settlement agreement, the master settlement agreement involved the enactment of laws that apply to cigarette manufacturers that did not sign the master settlement agreement and make no payments to the states. This settlement involved them instead putting money into an escrow account. Now, in 2012, Wyoming joined dozens of other states to resolve a major dispute with the tobacco companies relating to this master settlement agreement. In order for Wyoming to meet its obligations under this 2012 settlement, like all other participating states, it must report certain data that helps ensure proper calculations of master settlement agreements. And all this bill does, folks, is amend the relevant portion of the MSA, or Master Settlement Agreement statute that we have already, to authorize the Attorney General's office to release this data in accordance with that 2012 agreement. It just clarifies the law, and it clarifies the fact that we can still participate in the Master Settlement Agreement. The language is important. The most important language is on page 2, line 9, where it says that the director of the department and the attorney general shall share the information received under this act and may share this information with other federal, state, or local agencies or with a data clearinghouse, which takes or any other similar entity to process the master settlement agreement amounts. So I would urge your positive vote on this, and I move the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 97 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 97 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 123. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 123, introduced by Senator Boner. School Nutrition Pilot Project, an act relating to school district operations. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 123, School Nutrition Pilot Project, respectfully report back same to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrop, Paxton, Piperinen. Noes, Representative Brown. Signed, Representative Northrop, Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this Senate file was then referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Representative Burke, Hart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Northrop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 123 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and with the explanation is our representative from District Number 2.
Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would quickly explain Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All that this does is takes the appropriation that you see in the fiscal note at the back of the bill. Originally, this said that specifically would come from the School Foundation Program account. This amendment just says that instructs the department to appropriate the money from wherever it finds most easy to get it from. So if there are no further questions on the amendment, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment. Oh. Mr. Chairman, are you moved? Yeah. It's already been moved.
The question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment. Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, this is Senate File 123, and the aim of this is to, if they so desire, to give school districts an option to implement into their school nutrition programs locally grown, locally sourced meat. And so we'll quickly walk through the bill. And this authorizes that if they would like to, the district can increase the quantity of Wyoming poultry or lamb, pork, beef, or bison that is used in their school lunch programs. The idea of this is essentially to, A, help out local producers, local farmers and ranchers, B, to provide something of an educational opportunity for students in learning a little bit more about where their meat comes from and how it's locally grown and raised. The idea would be, I think, that in some cases to take these kids out on a field trip, if the district so desires, and show them the place where their meat's coming from. And so this isn't just a cost-saving method for both the states and the local districts, that it's also an educational opportunity. And so there are a few districts in the state who have already gone off of the federal nutrition program. And so that's by their purview, but this sort of just encourages options for those who may be choosing to do that. And also, this also, the idea would be that while there is this $25,000 appropriation, that in the long term that the education department would be saving money on this, because when a donated beef, for example, usually a pound of ground beef is somewhere around $2.25 from a commercial dealer, but and the processing costs only are around 75 to 90 cents a pound. So you're looking at over a dollar in savings per pound for beef if it's locally sourced and locally processed. It improved the quality of the school lunch program. Districts which that have transitioned to local protein have seen an increase in the participation and the quality of that protein. And once again, this can be tied back to education. So I can see the audience is absolutely riveted. And so if there are no further questions, I would call for the question on the bill.
The question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 123 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate File 123 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 35. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 35, introduced by Education, Virtual Education, an act relating to virtual education provided by public K-12 schools. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended a due pass. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrup, Paxton, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrup, Chairman. This bill was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson. Noes, Representative Burkhart. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 35 do pass, and I further move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And here with the explanation is our representative from Where the Waters Are Green.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill has been a long time coming. I've been serving on the Education Committee for 7 years, and we had a report every year on distance education. And the more that we asked questions on, the more that we didn't know. So for 3 years, we didn't know. The fourth year, the department came back and said that we should do a study on virtual education because the system that we had set up plainly wasn't working. There was a lack of data. We couldn't tell the difference between brick-and-mortar schools and virtual schools on the results of test scores and stuff. We even didn't have a very good question or handle on what the number of students were. And we still don't. And I had a handout that that has my initials on the top, and it's from the department that deals with education. And you can see that there are numbers around 1,000 for the last 3 years that they have running. And then underneath there's an approximately 200 to 250 students. And further consultations with the department, I asked, do these include students that are taking virtual classes from other places than the two school districts, virtual schools that are set up now? And the answer was no. And I put a note on the bottom of theirs that kind of gives you an example. We still don't know how many people are taking those classes. The other thing that was happening is that we had cumbersome procedures. We had modules to where they had to document these modules in order to give the students credits. And some of these classes had over 300 modules for a very short period of time. And the school districts were not coming up with memorandums of understanding. The undercurrent, but unconfirmed proposition is that we had growing virtual students for different needs. And so we did the task force. The 63rd legislature authorized the task force. I was such a burr in their saddle that they put me on it, and I got to go through there. So I'll go through the bill very quickly. On page 2, you can see that we have taken distance education and made it virtual, and there will be changes through that throughout the bill. On section A on there is that we'll publish a course catalog. We took this idea directly from the community college system to where that any virtual class that is taught within the community college system is put on a website. And if you have a student that's in college C and they need one more class to graduate, they can go to the Y class websites and find that class from the other 6 community colleges. To teach in a virtual setting is much different than it is to teach in a traditional classroom. So the superintendent will be providing training and technical assistance, and that's what you see in B. And if you see on page 3, we create on number D on line 11, a centralized learning management system. And this will become important later. If you're in a traditional school, basically they take roll every day. And if you're gone after 10 days, then what happens is you are dropped from the rolls and the state stops paying for you being in that school. It's kind of different with a virtual school, and one of the reasons or one of the things that we want to do is to have this management system so that we can progress or understand the progress that students are making, and yet if the student does stop making progress and drops out, that the state doesn't continue to pay for those people. So this mechanism to track ADM is very important. If you go on to the next page, on page 4, it talks about reporting. We have 2 school districts right now that have accepted or have set up virtual schools alongside their mortar, brick and mortar school. And one of the problems is we're not able to differentiate what students are doing well. And what this part of the bill will do is it will be able to separate those two groups. F on page 4 will start an advisory committee. This bill is long overdue, but it doesn't solve all the problems that we have in virtual education. If you continue on to page 6, and you can see that we added full-time virtual education to the Wyoming Education Accountability Act so that we can, again, make sure that we know how well our virtual students are going. Same thing on page 7. We're to measure the effectiveness of virtual education. If you move on to number 8, this is what I've told you before. Section C talks about ADM and payment of partial enrollment. We have kids that are taking they may be in a brick-and-mortar school for 5 periods. They're taking 2 periods virtual, and we're going to be able determine ADMs because of that. One of the reasons why we did this task force and came up with this bill is that we thought that the different districts would come up with memorandums of understandings or MOUs. And if you're on page 9, what we've done is we've done away with the MOUs. And basically what happens now is the two districts can determine between them if they let a student take a class, and then the districts that's providing the class will charge tuition to the regular school. If you go on to page 11, you can see that we have a definition of virtual school, and again, all the way through this legislation, we're changing it from distance education to virtual education. If you go on to page 11, one of the things is we're differentiating between full-time and part-time. Your full-time means that you are taking more than 50% or 51% or more. If you're looking on the bottom of page 11, part-time is 50% or lower. Then we go on to page 12, and we're talking about the duties of virtual schools. They're enrolling and assigning to appropriate grade levels, monitoring the participating students' progress, facilitate the necessary instructional support. If you have a student on an IEP, basically that virtual school has to provide that. Verify that virtual education are receiving complies with fulfills the educational programs that are set up. Again, if you go on page 14, it takes care of the MOUs and deletes them. Again, monitoring, facilitate the support, maintain the student records, verify that the virtual education program is being received, restricts the viral education to programs approved by the Department of Education. Going on to page 16, this is a big thing that it also does is allows virtual education program membership to be intermixed with the bricks and mortar schools. On 17, the Department of Education, by rule and regulation, consults with the Virtual Education Advisory Committee. And finally, On page 18, it has the appropriation. The amendment that we had that the good people of appropriations did is they took out the appropriation for the management system. I was asked to present this bill in front of appropriations, and I didn't have any information promote the support of that appropriation, and they appropriately took it out. But if you look on this on the back side of the handout that I gave you, you can look at about mid-size of the page, and it says learning management system that's going to track attendance and make sure that they're making adequate progress and provide all the records as needed for this whole system to work. Right now, to get this system started takes a $100,000 upfront cost, which the department that deals with education is willing to put up. But this bill called for $250,000 for a licensing fee to go forward. The savings in the 17-18 year will be about $341,000. Basically, what happens is we have 48 school districts in Wyoming, and 24 of them already have a management a learning management system, and they're paying approximately $691,000. So if they hook on to the state's program, those 24 school districts will have a savings of whatever they're paying for that. In the future, after the first year, what will happen is the department will make this part of their annual budget, and we will and the other 24 school districts will be able to hook onto this system and provide virtual classes for their students. So the question comes up with the Appropriations Committee amendment is to strike out the $250,000 appropriation. I would respectfully ask you to reject the Appropriations Committee decision for this one-time expense so that we can get all 48 districts on this system and actually save the system money as we go forward. And I'm sure that I will have some pushback on that.
We have an amendment. Speaker Pro Tem. We're on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the good bringer of the bill said, good explainer, the Appropriations Committee removed the appropriations. Remember, the appropriations was merely for a centralized management system, meaning they're going to contract with somebody to do what they're already doing on their own and pay someone else a lot of money to do it. They've indicated, and you have this handout in your box, that they can save all this money doing it. My answer would be, then pay for it out of the savings, not the school foundation program, which is currently in dire need of keeping the money it has. So let them pay for it out of savings. We've told other agencies to do the same thing. Save the money and pay for your changes out of what you think you can save. So I don't think the appropriation is needed at all. This was a study that was done, and now the study comes back and says, oh, we need more money. And I don't think that individual school districts tying into this management system that they want to purchase, this software system, provides virtual education. They already provide it. There's no additional here. It's merely providing money that really isn't needed. You can do this on their own money. We have other agencies who do the same thing. So I'm on and for the amendment, and that ask you to vote aye on the amendment.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to back up my fellow appropriations member on that. Vote aye on the amendment, and then when we're back on the bill, I'll come back and speak more on that issue.
Question. Hearing a question being called on the amendment, all those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 35, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
The amendment has been adopted. Senate, the amendment has passed. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor. Whoa, sorry. We were just catching our stride. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now that we're back on the bill, I would like to speak on and against the bill. And I would like to say first, I am very supportive of virtual education and distance learning and all these opportunities. But the presenter said that this bill had been a long time coming, and I just think that it needs another go-round on its road trip. And I'll just tell you a couple of comments. First of all, on page 2, I think that the people who put this together are really not thinking as broadly as they need to. If you look on lines 11 through 18 about establishing a statewide network, which I realize is in current language, but then the list, the course catalog, and all that sort of thing, a lot of the classes that our students take are actually not in-state classes. I know when my son was needing more science credits, his school counselor referred him to a class that was put together by a university in a state to the west. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the handout that the presenter put in your box, one of the quotes actually refers to a class from a state in the far southeast. So I think that and that feeds into the situation on page 3 when they're talking about the centralized learning management system. When you have students who are authorized to take classes that are even from other states, not just local school districts, I don't think they're going to feed into this learning management system that theoretically just connects the districts. You're still going to have a lot of kids taking credits from elsewhere. So I just don't think that the education system has really put all the pieces together just yet. And just one last comment on page 4, I would notice that these are typically students who are, maybe not learning well in the standard, in-the-box school system, and their parents should be particularly involved, and there's not really any reference to parents being on the advisory committee. So I just would encourage the concept, but I think this needs another years of work. So I would vote no on the bill.
Representative Larson Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And folks, I don't profess to have the knowledge and depth in education that the Breener and many of those that serve on this committee, and I've deferred often to their opinions and relationships. The comments that I have today really come from administration individuals up in my part of the world that has some concerns, and as I read through them, I thought that they made real sense. And so on your bill, if you would turn to page 6 and look there, starting on about line 3, where they talk about the subgroups for accountability. And what they have there currently now for accountability are federally driven and identified by characteristics that are really beyond the student's control, such as economically disadvantaged students, English language learners, identified racial and ethnic groups, and now we're putting in full-time virtual education students, but these aren't driven by anything other than choice. And so now we're putting these folks of choice into this subgroup that's it upsets that whole thing. And so remember that being a virtual student is a self-elected. Any school district or school or the Department of Education, I think, really should be able to sort the data to track the performance of a group of students. I don't know why we would want to create them as a subgroup there. If you turn to page 7, and about three-quarters of the way down there in line 14 to 19, that new language there, it talks about these enrolled students. The assessments results for the students attending the full-time virtual education shall be reported in aggregate. Schools should be accounting for the education of all students enrolled, regardless of how they choose to deliver the instruction, virtual or brick and mortar, is what some of my administrators say. Aggregating and separating the virtual education students from the accountability report of students in physical attendance carries unintended consequences and perhaps may even send the wrong message of who's responsible and accountable. On page 11, if you would, line 17 through 20, defines a full-time student of more than 50% of the student's education program being delivered virtually. But a student could elect to take all of his scheduled online courses for those assessed in accountability model and then physically attend the elective courses. And so then the student's academic performance for accountability is reported separately in the aggregate model, if I understand it right, of the virtual students. Schools choose the instructional delivery model they are funded to provide for the students, and creating a special condition for one model sends perhaps the wrong message. And so reviewing this, to the best of my understanding, and again, I often defer to these, but I think that there's some valid points of concerns that are being brought here by educators and administrators of our school districts that perhaps we need to address. And may the presenters or those that I often defer to can clear this up and make me feel more comfortable. At this point, I think that I agree with the good representative from here in Cheyenne that maybe this needs a little more time.
Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just to talk a little bit about the question on page 6. So this is full-time virtual education students. So most of these students are housed in two brick-and-mortar schools in the state of Wyoming. And sometimes with the current Accountability Act, we rate schools. And so particularly one of these schools has kind of shown to be at the bottom of the level, and you know, towards the bottom of the accountability scoring at times, and so we're trying to decide, is this because of these virtual education students, and so are these students dragging down the score of these schools, or just to try to tease out whether we're actually, you know, if you're going to have accountability, okay, if you want to get rid of the whole thing, I'm there with you, but if we're going to do it, everybody ought to be treated equally. And so this is just a way to take a look at these students to make sure that we are, one, capturing, you know, what's happening in these brick and mortar schools, to ensure where to ascertain where the scores are coming from, and to understand better how they fit into the system of accountability, and ultimately, you know, we are still mandated, whether we like it or not, by the federal government to have an accountability program. So. Thank you. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, you're good. Vice Chair, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to remind the people that this bill was put together by a task force that had many educators, both brick and mortar, had a lot of administration, had business partners, had parents. It was a real large area.
I'm not surprised that administrators are afraid of this bill, because when a student does go to virtual education, they take their ADMs with them, and that's scary in these kind of budget climates. You're right, it is a school of choice, but for accountability, it's needed, because we've had two school districts that have created kind of a sub-school to where that they have a virtual academy, to where that they are providing over 1,000 students full-time instructions. And as the former speaker talked about, there's real questions of whether or not why there are low scores. But some of the brick-and-mortar schools are saying, well, this isn't our students, these are the virtual students. And the virtual students are saying, no, we're the high-performing, and it's the brick-and-mortar that are tying us down, and we have no way of knowing which one is more effective. The bottom line is that there are a lot of parents and their that want their students to be in a virtual education, and they don't feel comfortable homeschooling them, so they go with the virtual academy. We have laws to protect homeschooling, and basically what happens is this is trying to make virtual education a lot more accountable. We can track to make sure that it's effective. And I think that this bill is ready for prime time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to answer one of the questions, and that was about the 50% being a full-time student. And understand that's as this bill's written, but when 236, or if 236 passes, that we have a fractional ADM in there where we go back and we pick up all those ADM, and it becomes fractionalized, and that's what some of the discussion has been about, the secular things that have gone on in schools, and this would indeed turn into, instead of being 50% being full-time, it would turn into 50% being 50%. Thank you.
Do I hear the question being called? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 35 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Division being called. All those in favor, please rise. Those opposed, please rise. As I was about to say, Senate File 35 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Do you want me to do it? Okay.
The next bill for our consideration. Whoa. Whoa. Madam Minority Floor Leader.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole begs rise to leave and sit again until 2 p.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The ayes have it. Committee announcements. Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, is right now just about to start hosting a debate by the Cheyenne East FFA chapter, and everyone is strongly encouraged to swing by and attend. Always a great show that the kids put on, and so it'll be down in L51 over the lunch hour. Hope everybody can make it. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your Joint Conference Committee number one on House Bill 22 was scheduled to meet at lunch today, but we're going to delay that until further notice while a mutually agreeable amendment to the bill can be worked on by the powers that be.
Thank you, Chairman. Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joint Judiciary will be meeting in S-27 in just 5 more minutes to continue our discussion on joint interim topics.
Thank you. Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess, and we will continue Senate File 165.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Blake.
Yeah, your Select Committee on Tribal Relations, those who were on it before, will meet in 5 minutes down in S-18 to talk about topics. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your House Appropriations Committee will meet at noon today to do Senate File 49 and Senate File 70, and we're going to be a little bit late. And then at 1 o'clock, your GAC Conference Committee will continue its ongoing negotiations.
We are recessed until 2 p.m.